brought to you by Sherco. Whether it's snow, land, or disaster management, the Sherco Group is the service partner for all seasons. This is White Gold. Make more money plowing snow with your host, Levi Jett.
Hey, that's right. You are tuning in to another episode of the White Gold Podcast. My name is Levi Jett, and welcome to season 3 of this podcast. I'm so excited to have everyone back with us and to be doing this for yet another season. So today is going to be a very different podcast from what we ordinarily do. Last season, I was accompanied for almost every episode by Andy Shirley, president of the Sherco Group, and Adam Klingensmith, the COO of the Sherco Group. And these two gentlemen are with me here today. But we also have area manager Derek Delf with us today from the Sherco Group, and operator Eden Shirley as well from the Sherco Group. And the reason there's so many of us here is we have a hell of a story to tell you. So not sure if you've been paying attention. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you're at least somewhat interested in snow. And so maybe you have been paying attention, but last week, a historic, record-breaking, just unimaginable, unbelievable snowstorm struck the Gulf Coast. Everywhere from Houston, Texas, all the way over to the panhandle of Florida and up the coast into the Carolinas, received a heavy amount of wintry precipitation. And myself included, and the gentleman in this room, and many more, decided to just kind of throw any reservations we had into the air and assemble a team to head down to the Gulf Coast to help support the people there where they were getting weather they've never experienced before. And so we're going to share some of the details of this story with you because, one, it's very unique. It's probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us. And, you know, New Orleans got, I think it was 8 to 9 inches of snow. And in some of the places near that city, they were in the double digits. I think the airport on the west side of the city was probably closer to a foot than it was 8 inches. And the last time that's happened in New Orleans, we're not really sure. In 1895, they picked up 2.3 inches of snow. And so beyond that, you know, we didn't keep weather records like we do now. And so it's really kind of hard to say when this may have happened again. But we know that it's not happened at least since weather records have been recorded. And that's what makes it just so fascinating, so unique, not only for us in this group, but, you know, the snow community in general and the general public, because, you know, we didn't really know this going down, but, you know, our story, what we were doing would soon be picked up by local media in New Orleans. And then local media and Indianapolis, where we're all from, and eventually some national media like the CBS Evening News, Good Morning Chicago, and Good Morning New York. Not to mention, you know, our social media posts across various platforms as a group. You know, we've got a lot of traction there, a lot of viewers, and really just a lot of overall support in what we have done. So here in just a minute, I'm going to introduce some of the guys in the room with me, and we're just going to kind of jump into it. I'll forewarn you now that the likelihood of us being able to wrap up this story in one episode is pretty low. So you are going to have to tune in to at least episode 2 and possibly even 3 or 4 to catch this full story. But it is one that we are extremely proud of, and are definitely really excited to share with you today. So again, going around the room, to my right, Andy Shirley, president of Sherco Group. He is with us today.
Hello again.
And then to his right, we have Adam Klingensmith, the Chief Operating Officer and part-time associate for Sherco Group.
What?
Okay. Sitting next to him is Derek Delf. He is an area manager for Sherco Group. Derek, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself real quick and what areas that you service?
Andy and I have worked together probably about the last 10 years. Usually I'm on the northern side of the Kokomo area and then Hamilton County. But as the years go by, we're just a little bit everywhere. So we bring in about 10 to 15 trucks with our crew and skid steers and whatnot. So we're mostly Hamilton County and north.
Okay, cool. And again, for those not as familiar with Indiana, that would be north central Indiana. To think north of Indianapolis by about half hour or so, and then that's pretty much Derek's backyard. And then sitting to the right of him is Eden Shirley. Eden, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, man?
Hello, I'm Eden.
Captivating, man. Way to do it.
He doesn't have much to say.
No, man. A few words. I'm glad we brought him on the podcast. All right, so let's get into it. The first question I have, and guys, just kick this around the room and answer it, any question at your leisure, but how did it feel, I guess, just on the drive down, not knowing yet where we were headed, but knowing that the destination was somewhere along the Gulf Coast, how did that feel just, we're going down there for snow? I mean, for me, it felt just, crazy surreal.
I had my shorts packed. I was ready to go to the beach.
Yeah, the beach is covered in snow.
That's all right. I'm a snowman.
It seemed for me that just every single checkpoint, as we traveled south and made it, past Nashville, made it out of Tennessee and into, Alabama, and just, kept getting lower and lower and lower. And you would just kind of have to remind yourself that you're not going down here for vacation. Like, you're going to actually fight a winter storm. And that was just, to me, it's just something I kept having to, kind of rewire my brain over and over again to process this, just because it was so weird.
It was a weird, weird feeling for sure. And what a different snowstorm than I've ever handled. You would think, and like what I've told you many times, while he was down there, it's not going to last long. It's not going to stick around long, but it ended up sticking around for a lot longer than what I ever thought.
Yeah, no, surprisingly long.
We got up to 48 degrees the next day, and it's like the snow ain't melting.
Yeah, no, that was something that I didn't see coming. To tell you the truth, when heading down, we really thought that a lot of this would melt right away, wouldn't be around longer than probably 24 hours. And I think a lot of us, and not just us in this group, but especially regionally down there, and perhaps even nationally, kind of just thought, all right, I mean, they're probably overblowing this, blowing this way out of proportion. There's no way these communities on the Gulf Coast are going to pick up any measurable snowfall, and all this is just going to kind of be bullshit that we're going to be able to laugh about. But that was not the case at all. And no. In fact, it was another area manager for Sherco, Steve Durham, who kind of first called out to us that, hey, if we're trying to go down here and plow some snow, we may want to look at Louisiana.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. 5 miles before we needed to turn off, they're in Birmingham. He says, keep going straight. And I thought, well, I'm going to listen to him. And I'm glad I did, because it was the right choice to make, I guess.
Yeah, because originally, we were going headed for Mobile, Alabama, to be in kind of a center ground type of area. Easily able to respond to anything in the panhandle of Florida. Mobile was in the bullseye for some weather themselves. And then again, we wouldn't be all that far from Louisiana if we got called in over there. But
The interstates was closed, so he couldn't have got there.
Yeah, no, and again, fortunately for us, you know, we had guys that were actively tracking things as we were headed down, which really was just a huge, huge game changer for what ended up happening. You know, if Steve hadn't been doing that, we'd just been driving blind to Mobile, then this wouldn't have been nearly the story that it became.
Yep, no, for sure. But Steve and Derek have been around enough years and traveled enough storms and worked enough. I mean, we plowed snow all over this country, me, Steve, and Derek. Even Eden. Eden's been across several states in snow, so even at his age.
Yeah.
He's gotten a lot of experience, so I can't help that he don't like to talk.
I thought it was kind of neat because, you know, I got called kind of down in the second wave. And Andy calls and says, hey, we need more trucks. And I'm thinking, wow, I mean, what's going on down there? You know, like you guys were saying, this is a sunny place down there that gets warmer weather and stuff. And I'm thinking, so I hit the road, we're going down, and my thoughts are thinking, geez, how many of these people have ever seen snow? Have they ever been affiliated with it? And I'm thinking, we get down there, you know, we're going to be the cat's meow because this is going to be like it's right in our backyard.
Yeah, no.
This is just what we do every winter.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, this is, I told them in City Hall, they said, what's this like to you? And I said, it's just another Tuesday to me.
Yeah, again, another Tuesday for us, but again, once in a generational happening for them. We talked about it a lot, you know, that this is going to be their blizzard of 78. You know, this is going to be what, you know, generations of people talk about for years. And, you know, in 80 years, you'll have someone, you know, at a retirement home trying to convince their grandchildren that, you know, yes, it did snow here, you know, and it's not bullshit. But yeah, so, you know, we made the decision to start heading for Louisiana. And which at that time, you know, it, snow was ongoing.
Boy, Alabama's a long-ass state to drive through.
Man.
That's the worst. And there's nothing to look at but trees.
Mm-mm. No, but to be fair, that's most of the country.
Yeah,
true. But anyway, so, you know, heading to Louisiana, it wasn't very long after we made that decision that Louisiana was placed under their first ever blizzard warning. And again, that's something that I didn't even consider was the fact of the how much the Gulf of America influences, you know, like the storm systems and the winds coming off of the coast, because it really made for, again, a very unique snowstorm type of environment, and it didn't have any trouble at all reaching, you know, blizzard criteria pretty quickly after it started. So, you know, not only, you know, were they under a winter storm warning, which, you know, those aren't too prevalent down there. Now they're under a blizzard warning as well, and that included the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, and that was because of the wind. I mean, they had to meet blizzard criteria from the National Weather Service. So it's not like they got 2 inches of snow and, you know, oh, it's a blizzard out here, we're not used to it. I mean, this is all prompted based off of statistics like it is across the country. So, I mean, we had 2, 2.5 foot, 3 foot drifts in places. I've worked some blizzards up in Chicago, and I'm not going to say it was compatible with up there just because we didn't have the pre-temperatures like we would up in Chicago. It was kind of warm where it started. That I think that slowed some down, but first day and a half was pretty close.
Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't even because that was one of the things that I think really kind of just helped all this form was the fact that we did have about 36 hours before this storm where, you know, we did have cold temperatures. And it wasn't like it was, you know, 70 and then, you know, the front came by and this weather was associated with the front and we had a little bit of snow on the back end, you know, like, we had cold in place, you know, to where this event started as snow. But as we saw, and we pretty much knew this and suspected this, but, you know, no one was out pre-treating. because of lack of equipment, lack of, you know, being prepared for something like this. And, you know, we went round and round with, you know, we kept saying, we can't believe they don't have this, or we can't believe that, you know, they don't even have just one freaking plow. But, you know, as I've said many times, you know, to kind of, you know, draw it back to something we're familiar with, if it had been no less than 60 degrees here for the last 150 years, talking highs and lows, never got below 60 one time, you would not own a winter coat. And, you know, to me, it's pretty much the same thing, because as we were talking about and joking about, could you imagine being that, you know, purchasing agent for the city of New Orleans, coming to work and telling people about how you just bought 15 new plows? You'd probably be fired the same day.
I don't know. Probably got a raise after that one.
Yeah. Timing's everything, but
material.
Still,
you know, material is the thing. I don't think plows, you may never use them again in 100 years, but some of the things that I've seen down there, that the bridge is freezing up and it's 40 degrees with wind chill factors, I think material is something that they should really look into. You know, keeping material on hand and keeping some V-box spreaders and some, maybe some liquid spreaders and Dupree, especially the place is sitting on nothing but one gigantic bridge.
Yeah, that was something that I didn't know we were headed into, you know, how many elevated, you know, highways and streets that there were around there. And, you know, as we got down in this Louisiana area, New Orleans, you know, we learned that, hey, you know, these city streets are made with a composite asphalt seashell mix. And, you know, we kind of kept sort of thinking about, all right, you know, I wonder how that interacts with, you know, freezing temperatures and how easy this material that's not used in the north anywhere, you know, holds up against ice and snow and again, water against 32 degrees, and how quickly that's going to flash freeze. And we kind of found that, you know, some of those areas, you know, tend to be, you know, slicker a lot quicker than what we expected.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're jumping ahead a little bit. Let's get back to, you know, what really led us into New Orleans, and, you know, how all that came to be.
Well, like you said, Steve says, let's go to New Orleans. He said, that's where the heart of it's going to be. We rolled down there. I don't know. What would you say? We got within 30, 35 miles of New Orleans, and we first started seeing snow, and the closer we got to it, the heavier it got.
It picked up quick.
Yeah. And then we're crossing the bridge, and it's like, as soon as we cross that bridge, it's like, man, we got 3 inches here. Me and you rolled down towards the city.
We got to back up, because we've not even talked about how all that transpired, because, you know, you were, you know, tasking me with trying to find us, you know, something to do down here. And again, you know, it was your idea to maybe reach out to the news stations. Maybe, you know, they might be able to.
Yeah. Well, you know, we was all driving. We was all kind of listening to the radio. We're watching live news feeds. And when I seen that the local Fox News was doing live feeds about, and they were throwing snowballs, and they were just amazed at seeing snow for the first time, and said that, you know, that they don't know within 75 miles of that city if there's even a snowplow out there. And I thought, well, I got 14 of them behind me. So that's when I told you to contact the news station and see what they can do and get us in. And that's what got us into the city.
Yeah. And, you know, I ended up making contact with a reporter down there, and, you know, we started talking about, you know, what we have, and they started just sharing our information with a bunch of different people. And within a half an hour, you know, we had a phone call come in from the director of Homeland Security for New Orleans, a call I definitely did not expect to get. But, you know, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, what our capabilities are and numbers. And, you know, a guy couldn't believe that, you know, we were sitting about an hour outside of the city, you know, waiting to drive in. And, you know, so that was, you know, I mean, a major blessing for those people, because again, they, it was very clear that they had nothing else.
It was called being at the right place at the right time. And yeah, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes and I've said it for half of this job is luck. And we had luck on our side that day.
We definitely did. And we, you know, were able to make a deal with coming in to essentially be the snow contractor for the city at that point.
Yep. And doors open from there. Good people. I liked it down there.
Fantastic time. I mean, for being, for what they were up against, you know, I mean, honestly, they remain pretty calm, cool, collected. I mean, granted, this is a city and this is an area that constantly is under threat of hurricane and tropical storms and tornado outbreaks and everything else. So, you know, what's some snow, but again,
yeah, but know, everybody stayed in, you know, yeah. It's yeah. Like for the first 48 hours, I said, does anybody here drive cars? And everybody was walking, you know, I'm not used to that from our area. You know, a snowstorm hits, everybody wants to pile on the streets and go see if Walmart's open.
Yeah. And it really,
get some milk and eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really the sad thing is that, you know, we live in an area where everyone knows the ramifications of snow and they know that you can get stranded and you can slide off and there's all these risks. And everyone here drives and everyone here insists on still going out. Whereas,
yeah, but it's the same people that's out on the roads driving are the same ones that went to the local convenience store and bought all the milk and eggs off the shelf.
Yeah. But, you know, down there, I mean, these people didn't know, you know, again, fully what to expect, but they took the warning from local government. They stay the hell off the roads. And which really made our job a lot.
Yeah,
a lot
we was easier. Able to get, you know, the emergency, the hospital routes all done that night, the first night we was there.
Yeah.
And get the trauma center opened up. And then, you know, next day we go into the airports and work on them as well as the city. And then, you know, to top it off, we ended up opening up I-10 and I-510 and some of the other major interstates around the area.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, they trusted us with a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
They trusted us with, you know, reopening their city.
We didn't, you know, we didn't have the equipment that we really would have had. I mean, there's a lot of things that would have made the job easier on us if we would have had bigger stuff or bigger trucks, but we made do with what we had and we made it work and we got it done in a reasonable amount of time for what we had.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Now shifting gears a little because the left side of the room is just awfully quiet. All right. So Derek, Eden, even Adam, he's just sitting over there doing God knows what.
He didn't do nothing but stay home and sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, want to get some interaction with you guys, too. So, you know, tell me something. Tell me, like, you know, a takeaway, a memory, you know, something that, you know, you're always going to remember about this. Or, you know, again, just something that, you know, just stands out to you that you're going to, you know, kind of, you know, take forward with you.
I would say the biggest thing that stood out to me was the roads that you described. They were a lot harsher on our cutting edges. They didn't seem as smooth, and you could see the seashells in them. And, you know, I remember getting out a couple times on the bare road there after we had plowed it, you know, and looking and just feeling the road and thinking, what the heck is this? You know what I mean? Why is this so different than up home? And I would say the second thing that probably the most thing I remember is all the expansion joints that were on the roads. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting here plowing. I'm looking left and right. I'm not on a bridge. I'm looking left and right. What the hell is all these expansion joints? What are these for? You get off and you look and you're actually in the air a little bit. You know, they're building these on old bayous and, you know, swampy ground that's in the water, and you don't even realize it. You're driving across that, and you've got these expansion joints every 20 feet, you know, and if you're not careful, they can be hard as hell on the plow and the blade.
I told you, watch that rate, bump your blade up a little bit.
That's the two things I remember the most, you know, is actually coming off an exit and looking back and seeing that the road was actually suspended, but you don't know it when you're on I-10.
No.
You know, and
so did you go through a cutting edge?
Almost. Yeah. I went through, I had seven of my trucks and I've got seven sets already ordered and picking up tomorrow.
Are they Boss or Western?
Boss.
Yeah. No, it was jarring to plow those city streets.
SKP.
I'm thankful that we finally got, you know, to the interstates because those city roads were just, I mean, they were awful.
I'm glad we didn't have to do some of the ones like Bourbon Street and some of them, you know, once the event was over, when we went out and thought, let's take this evening and let's go eat supper and check out Bourbon Street, you know, those they'd milled those roads and the manholes was sticking up a foot above the actual surface at the time. And I'm like, man, that would have rocked our world.
Yeah. And, you know, as we sit there and, you know, look back at the reason why, you know, like, why were these streets so hard on the plows? You know, why were, you know, we having so many issues? And it really comes down, I think, to that they've never had, this has never been a concern with them engineering roads. Right. They've never had to worry about a plow going down, because you sit here and, I mean, on the way home, I was looking at the roads, you know, just noticing the differences as driving back. And, you know, again, around here, I mean,
when
even
did that change? Like,
what,
when did that type of roadway change?
Like right around Tennessee, like as soon as you cross into Tennessee, it's like the surface kind of changed. The even the asphalt got darker at that point.
Huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, we, you know, had quite an experience. You know, I know me personally, I've got like a baseball size hole in my cutting edge. I don't know what the fuck I hit. I've got a crack above that and a crack on the other side too. And again, you know, we did have a lot of guys, you know, burn through cutting edges. We even had some A-frames break on some of our plows. And, but again, you know, to the credit of our team and honestly to the credit of the Department of Public Works from New Orleans, I mean, they were gracious enough to give us a
shop where we could, you know, work on our equipment and keep things up and running, which was definitely the name of the game for us down there. But again, you know, the roadways we definitely didn't anticipate. Just again, the
lingo's a lot different too. I was asking one guy if he had a welder and he said, yeah, I'll call him in. I said, no, I just need a welder. I'll do it. He said, well, let me call him in. And he says, I got a machine. And I said, a welder. And he goes, no, that's a machine. He says, I'll have to call the welder in. It's like, man, I don't think you're grasping what I'm saying here.
Yeah, that. And then they kept referring to like the medians as like common spaces or common areas or something like that, which that was a new one for me too. Took me a minute to pick up on what they were trying to put down on that. So Eden, how about you, man?
Speak up.
Say it with your chest.
What's your favorite? Trees. The palm trees?
Palm trees.
Palm trees is my favorite.
Snow covered palm trees were new. Yeah.
What about the people coming out and just the hospitality of the people, you know?
First couple of days, it was really good.
Yeah. The last day, they was ready for us to go.
Yeah.
For sure. But, you know, we had people, you know, because like Andy mentioned, I mean, we had a lot of people walking around just to get out and, you know, to see, you know, because they didn't want to risk driving and getting stuck or something. So had all these people in droves just walking around. But, you know, as we'd head down these city streets, I mean, these people, number one, you know, they had their phones out, you know, to record us coming through. But often they would like legitimately cheer, you know, and, you know, clap and yell. And
it was kind of like we was in a parade, really.
It really was.
At one
yeah.
point, you felt like you was in a parade.
Yeah. And which, again, you know, I know it's goes back to, you know, once in a lifetime, never happened before. So this is kind of the reaction you get. But, you know, for a job that a lot of times seems very thankless, you know, it was really cool to be kind of embraced in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, usually you go traveling, working big winter storms or even blizzards, you know, it's, you just don't get the people that engage like that, you know?
No, you don't. No. And, yeah, which again, you know, just speaks to the caliber of people we dealt with down there. Again, from the city, from Department of Public Works, you know, some of the supervisors, the hourly guys, you know, they were right there with us, you know, busting their ass to make sure that we had what we needed and that we could do our job.
Yeah. And thanks to Derek for bringing down a spare plow and some spare parts that we needed from up here. You know, we went down, we took a few things that we thought we might need, but I never would have dreamed. We all have new cutting edges. I didn't think we'd have to replace them the next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, A-frames, things like that. That's all part of doing business. I mean, that's stuff we keep on the shelf, but, you know, your standard hoses, things like that. Well, I never broke a hose. Cutting edges was the hardest thing in springs.
Absolutely. Yep. All right, Adam, let's hear from you, man. So you had a completely different angle on this because you stayed at home in bed and watched it all from TV and didn't do anything as we were gone.
It was really cool to see you guys on the news. I'm really proud to be a part of that.
To be part of it. Yeah. Yep.
Well, I guess explain what you did, because you took care of the dispatching for Florida.
Somebody explain what you did, because we don't know.
I couldn't see you, so you know, all I got's what you're saying, you know.
No, I was actually working with Jefferson Parish, which is just a little bit to the west of downtown New Orleans, setting up the other parish that we were going to be working in. We basically worked in two different parishes, Jefferson and Orleans Parish. So I set up stuff with them, multiple phone calls, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with 15, 20 people, you know, on Zoom meetings and stuff like that. And they were very nice to work with. Anything we wanted, very accommodating. Tried really hard getting maps, things like that. Didn't really come through too much with that. You know, so I was trying to feed information to you guys down there on where you were at, what you were looking for, roadways and things like that. So we didn't get a lot of support that way. I don't know if they don't have maps down there. They just automatically are born and know the roadways.
But what they did worked well. They give us a chauffeur or a chaperone. That's the next best thing.
They basically led you guys around.
Yeah, for sure.
And to paint a picture, I mean, what we're talking about is we had a DPW dump truck that would lead our crews wherever we needed to go. And, you know, so we wouldn't have to, you know, actively think about where we're going. We just kind of follow the leader.
And it was an escort, because they would lead us, and they'd have, you know, I don't know about Jefferson Parish, but Steve, and I know Eden was in Jefferson for a while, but they was being led by a dump truck, and they'd have 4 or 5 other trucks with them, you know, and there's times that we would have 2 to 3 other trucks with us, but, you know, they would lead the way, and they would get us through the traffic, through everywhere we need to go, the fastest route. We even made a couple new snow people out of them guys.
Yeah, and, you know, those escorts, I mean, they would shut down intersections for us like we were the president rolling through. I mean, you know, dump trucks would get up there and just, I mean, they would speed into a red light intersection, you know, horn, laying on the horn like crazy, and to let our trucks go past so we wouldn't have to stop.
Yeah, but really, does anybody stop at red lights down there? I didn't even see anyone, even the cars.
I guess it's a suggestion or something.
Option, I guess.
I noticed the same thing, man. People would pull up and look and not even come to a stop and just go. So I've seen that at stop signs a lot, but red lights, I've not seen that much. Yeah, that was kind of weird.
But while these guys were in New Orleans too, we had guys all across the top of Florida. We took care of 65 gas stations across the top of the panhandle. So we had to get those mostly salt. Early on the first night, it was a lot of snowplow pushing, but by the time they made it across closer to New Orleans, it was mainly just salting at that point.
So, yeah.
We had that plus everything else. We actually had a couple of small events here.
I was going to say, we had events back home too.
Yeah.
Which well, again, it goes to speak to, you know, the flexibility and the capabilities of the Sherco group.
Yeah.
I mean, who else can fight a storm on the Gulf Coast in multiple locations and fight, you know, a storm back home too?
And what we do at Sherco is we've got different districts around the state that handle different things. So we don't empty out a complete district. We'll take two or three trucks from each district. So that leaves, you know, somewhere from 3 to 10 trucks still remaining back home in that district. So we didn't let anybody down here. We had a pretty significant snowfall come in that just dumped a quarter to half inch within maybe an hour and a half, which was a little bit more than what we were anticipating. But we still had plenty of trucks around to service every property we had to service, all of our township roads, everything like that. So if nothing got left, nothing got missed. The guys did a really good job of stepping up around home, and some of them had to do a couple different areas that they weren't normally used to. But with our mapping system and our in-house Yeti system, it works out pretty easy. They just go to that and go to work. So the guys around here did a phenomenal job keeping up with stuff.
Which that reminds me, you know, since the last time we've all gotten together to do this, you know, you guys have secured a contract with the city of Sheridan, Indiana here. So over the summer, I guess it really wasn't official until Election Day.
Yeah, November.
Yeah, but, you know, the town of Sheridan had plans to essentially annex Adams Township, and which kind of left kind of a void or an opportunity, you know, for a change to be made there in road maintenance. And, you know, we all worked on that to get that home. But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome because, you know, now we're, you know, getting deeper into municipality work. And, you know, so far, you know, knock on wood, I mean, the Sheridan project's gone pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, the
most, it's nice not having anyone complain.
Yeah. I mean, like most, you know, most town members are appreciative of, you know, the difference of the service we're able to offer, versus, you know, and not throwing shade, but, you know, versus what the county plows, you know, offered before. And again, it wasn't that the county plows were incapable. It was just that we have different plans and different ways of doing things. But again, you know, it shows because, you know, you can definitely tell when you're driving into Adams Township and Sheridan, versus if you're driving out of it, even on the state highway sometimes. So it's just another, you know, cool thing. And then again, with this New Orleans thing too, it's another, you know, big pin in our cap, as far as when it comes to, you know, municipal work and, you know, on different levels, we're able to do that.
Not just that, since we've talked and had this program, you know, we picked up part of the International Airport in Indianapolis inside the fence. So we're, you know, one of three companies that's even allowed to work inside the fence at that.
So why don't you tell them about the storm we had and, you know, what the crews down there were able to accomplish?
Down in New Orleans?
No, down in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we got an email. That storm that we had, how was it? I can't remember the dates. It's all been one long day for me. But
8th,
yeah. But, you know, we had, 9-10 inches of snow over a 36-hour period with some much. Wind,
yeah.
A little bit of sleet, freezing rain and stuff. So we work on a signature air. At 17 acres that leads up to the taxiway. We get an email after that event that said, and I guess I'm kind of learning about the aero side of things, but I didn't realize that the runways typically never close. It's the airlines that close. And a lot of it has to do with their pads and the crews taking care of the pad to get them out to the runway. And we was the only hub in the airport that didn't have a close or a delay or anything else. And they actually landed 13 airplanes during the snowstorm.
And I believe that was, I mean, not only Indianapolis, but we're talking that, you know, other airports throughout the region that experience this winter storm, Indy was the only one with a signature air to keep things going.
Yeah, there was 13 signature air hubs that was affected with it. We was the only one that kept going.
That's damn impressive.
Which is cool because we also hold the hangar that delivers organs for organ transplants across the country. And, you know, so that's where it gets into crucial and you know, life-death situations there. So, you know, it's I'm glad to know that we have a crew and a team capable of making that stuff happen.
Yeah, no, it doesn't get any more critical, I think, than that probably, you know. Someone waiting on a transplant sure doesn't want to hear about, you know, winter storm impacting it. So that's really awesome.
You know, it's hard to believe, you know, that who would think that a liver transplant depends on the snow removal at the airport?
Yeah, 100%.
It's just things like that that nobody thinks about and how crucial snow removal is.
And again, you know, this is on a much, you know, smaller scale because it's not quite life and death, but you know, New Orleans is hosting the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. And, you know, so when we were down there, I mean, just from when Indy hosted back in, what, 2012? You know, back then, you know, I know that, you know, logistically speaking, you know, we had, you know, truckloads after truckloads of things coming into the city to prepare for this. And, you know, there was a lot of that area that we weren't working in New Orleans and Louisiana that was closed and remained closed and may have only had emergency access only even up to the time we were leaving, you know, because we've, you know, seen, you know, some of the comments and on Facebook and TikTok of our videos and what we were doing down there. And, you know, a lot of them are supportive, but a lot of them are from dumbasses who've never been in a plow and has no idea what they're talking about. But
I like haters.
I
like haters.
It kept me going because it was, you know, comedy relief, you know, is what it ended up being.
It's easy to sit on the other side of a keyboard and not be doing the job. They're just pissed because they didn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, but again, with all the stuff coming in for the Super Bowl and stuff and you know, them needing to get, you know, these roads open. Again, you know, as we were pulling out of the city, you know, we learned that there were still like massive issues throughout parts of, you know, Louisiana and parts of greater New Orleans. You know, for instance, we'd heard through the grapevine that, you know, about 13 Walmarts in that greater New Orleans area had been closed since Monday. Mm-hmm. And we're talking, I mean, a week of lost revenue for, you know, 13 Walmart stores. That's an incredible amount of money. And, you know, so
again, a better snow plan would have took care of it.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. But, you don't know just how many other places, you know, had issues opening, getting back to business, that sort of thing. But again, everything we touched, again, I don't know if I say we did record time clearing, but I know that everything we touched, I was honestly impressed with, you know, how quickly we got it open and taken care of and were able to report back to the city, hey, whatever this asset is, it's good to go. And I know in terms of the airport in particular, and we're running short on time for this episode, so we're going to pick this up as kind of I alluded to in the beginning, but and we'll talk more in depth about, you know, some of these, you know, projects we did while we were down there, but the airport in particular, you know, they reached out to me asking, you know, for the name of the snow contractor who did the work because they had to put out some sort of a press release to the FAA, to other airports in the region. Because as they were telling them that they were open, and we're talking 12 hours after the blizzard warning was canceled, and less than that from when we had noticed that we had the job and could start working on it, that the airport was operational again. And so what it sounded like was other airports around the region thought that essentially, you know, the New Orleans airport was kind of pulling their leg and, you know, like kind of just bullshitting them, you know, saying, oh, hey, we're open, you know.
That was just another Wednesday to them.
Yeah. And, you know, but now it's, you know, it's, they had to go out and say, okay, we're not going to believe you, basically. until you put out official word that this is true.
Until the governor landed at that airport.
Right.
Because he couldn't land at his normal one.
Yeah. And so, again, you know, we were able to do that so they could, you know, produce what they needed to. And again, you know, the airport was open. The terminals started opening the next day and the day after that. But, you know, I really think that they remained closed so long just because people couldn't, you know, leave home and get to work sort of thing. So, but yeah, no, an incredible, incredible time. And but
the time frame that you guys had, like Orleans Parish is 350 square miles.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. Jefferson Parish is 642 square miles with less roadways, but longer roadways
because
it's a longer parish. You guys just attacked those two major parishes in a matter of 3 days and got the municipal airport open, you know, within that short period of time. That was pretty.
The big. Airport was within the first 24 hours of being there.
Yeah. That was pretty big.
No, for sure.
And that was with how many inches on the ground at the airport?
The airport had close to a foot.
Yeah.
In the city, inches. I mean, 8-9 inches. And
it
like
was
I
hard
said,
to tell because
was.
Of the drifting.
There was a lot
but,
of drift.
Yeah. But still, I mean, just, you know, going to the airport because, you know, Aaron and I were the first two there.
Right.
And I mean, it looked like, damn, okay. You know, like, especially when you drove up, so you drove up like the departure ramp, you know, to drop, you know, whoever off or whatever. And up there, I mean, that was a freaking mess, man.
Well, Alan had to spend a lot of time up there, like multiple hours opening that.
Yes, because, I mean, there was nowhere to go with that snow, really. And, you know, but no, that was a nightmare situation, those ramps. But then again, you know, to his credit, I mean, and, you know, Aaron's part of that, you know, Alan is part of that Indianapolis crew.
Yeah.
With Signature Airways. So again, he had a pretty good mindset for how to go about this and really led that endeavor out there.
Yeah.
So again, you know, just fantastic guys that, you know, we went down there with that, you know, everybody was able to bring something and bring a lot to the table to get this done. But all right, we're going to cut this here and we're going to pick back up for episode 2. You know, as we move on, you know, through telling the story, we're probably going to bring in some, you know, additional people too, to get some, you know, different angles. And, I would like to get Alan in here maybe to, you know, talk about the airport experience out there,
you know,
his take on some things, and especially to go back and talk about that.
Then maybe Eden will share some stuff.
Well, I was going to say, maybe we should invite him. Yeah,
Eden,
no.
Shut up. You're talking too much.
Yeah, no, it's hard to get a hold of that guy, man.
What do you think, Derek? Any last words? I mean, how would you compare this to some of the other travel events that we've been on?
Definitely a little different. Like I said, the roads were different. You know what I mean? When you get down there in expansion joints, that's totally different than up here. You know what I mean? And, you know, it was different than like we do the streets of Indianapolis when we do those, just for the fact that, you know, they were leading us around and they were, you know, we were going down I-10 plowing this and we're not doing that off ramp or, you know, why aren't we doing that? Well, then it was because that's a state line over there. What do you mean that's a state line? You know, we're not Mississippi yet. And
yeah, they call state lines as their county lines. It's like everything's different from what we're used to.
That particularly was one of the biggest mind fucks being down there was, oh, you guys are getting close to the state line.
And then the next exit, we're like, wait a minute here. In downtown New Orleans.
We have 64 parishes. And they're like counties around here. Right.
64.
But they operate very differently than counties do here. Yeah.
Inside of each parish, like Jefferson Parish, I think there's 7 cities. So there's 7 mayors. And they all have to collectively come up with, you know, decisions for their parish.
Well, that'd be confusing.
Of the parish. It's really different.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool.
So. Yeah. I heard the president just called and I'm like,
yeah.
Trump? You're like, no, the president of the parish.
Yeah. Well, this is getting pretty big if Trump's calling.
I thought, he can come ride in a plow truck if he wants.
He rode in a garbage truck.
Yeah, he rode in a garbage truck, didn't he?
Probably
yeah. I don't think a plow truck would bother him one bit.
No. But, all right. So, the one thing I want to close with, you know, we've not all of us, but some of us have, you know, seen it and heard it said. You know, we've kind of picked up the unofficial title of the Heroes of New Orleans. And, you know, it's not that the city leaders call us this. It's that the residents do, which honestly means more. And, you know, it's something that I don't think that, well, really any other plow drivers have probably ever been called the heroes of anything.
Assholes.
Let alone one of the largest cities in the country. So, you know, the guys that we had on this job, the guys that we had going down in the first wave, or the second wave, or the third wave, whatever. I know that, you know, that they're all, you know, terrifically proud of the opportunity they got. And, you know, again, to be able to help the residents of New Orleans and, again, to kind of, you know, wear that unofficial title as a badge of honor. So.
Yeah, but I still don't claim it. It's just another day of work.
No one cares. But all right, guys, we're going to shut this down and you have to tune in to episode 2 of season 3 to catch more of the story. So thank you guys much for listening and please follow us, share, get this in the hands of anybody you can. Thank you much.